Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. Each podcast will explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some will look at the matchday experience, while others will explore broader themes. But every podcast will deliver value to anyone listening in football, or indeed any other spectator sport. Whether it's general advice you need, or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we reckon that a regular dose of the fan experience will make a difference. So join me, Mark.
And me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the experience on match days, making clubs more sustainable and relying less on winning to keep fans engaged.
And of course, if you want to find out more about our work, the Fan Experience Company, and all of the projects we've been involved in, please visit www.fanexperienceco.com. So, welcome to the podcast. And this podcast is one of those where we look at a very specific part of the matchday experience. We're going to look at the retail experience. For most of the clubs we deal with, ticket revenue is the most important source of revenue and income. But obviously, the club shop, if run properly and in a way that appeals to the different fan segments out there, can also make a significant contribution. So Darren and I, of course, have been doing assessments for many years. I mean, Darren, what's been your overall impression of the club shops you've visited?
Yeah, I'd say one of the biggest hit or miss touch points that we look at, I think, would be a fair description, do you think?
Why do you say that?
Well, I just think that the shop is such a pivotal part of the matchday experience if it's used properly. It's a real destination. And I think there's just such a divide between the shops that really understand that and they're colourful and inviting and really appealing to all kinds of fans and sell a huge range of merchandise and clothing and all that sort of thing that attracts people. And then you get, on the other side of it, you get a shop that's almost in the dark and hidden away and no one even knows it's there. And I think it's one that, if you get it right, it's great. If you get it wrong, it can be a real letdown.
Yeah, and of course, it's part of that other kind of unique football problem of, you know, only being open for business, you know, on a Saturday. Of course, it is open other days of the week, but on a Saturday, you get a huge crowd of people there. And the rest of the week, you know, hardly anyone moving around. Sometimes as well, you know, the building, the physical challenges that some of the club shops have, size, the age of the stadium.
It's tricky for clubs. I mean, I'm not saying the ones that get it wrong do so, you know, out of neglect. It's almost, there are some challenges to retail. It is a really interesting part of the match day because I guess the feeling some clubs even think, how much effort should we put into this? Because it's, you know, a relatively small part of it. And I think people miss the bigger picture that actually attracting people to the shop or to that area around the shop can actually do them far more good as well as just selling a few items.
Yeah, and of course, as our producer has just pointed out, some clubs have to deal with the remote shop, whose club shops are a significant walk away from.
There's nothing worse than doing an assessment and getting to a ground, having walked, you know, a mile and a half, and then they say, "Oh yeah, the club shop's in the town," or, you know, a mile and a half in the other direction. So that can be a challenge as well.
Well, to help us with this subject, and also to go into what it's actually like to be a lead assessor for the Fan Experience Company, we've got on today's show Andy Olorencio. Andy, welcome.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing? How are you coping with the current COVID situation?
Yeah, we're coping. We're slowing down. We'll be stopping and having time to think about things, which can't be a bad thing.
No, it can't. Absolutely. I mean, you've been with us now, we were just saying before we started recording, for 8 years. You've covered football at every level. You write for, you know, others, but significantly when Saturday comes. You know, you love non-league football. You love league football. You've travelled all over the country. Let's start with your perspectives on the retail experience. I mean, do you see that clubs give it the importance it deserves?
I think it's been mixed in my experience. I think I've done around about 100 visits for you, and different levels of the game. We went through a period where we thought we were seeing the same things most club shops. There wasn't a lot that really clubs were doing to make to make that part of the experience really stand out.
That's really interesting, because you know a lot of what we find, if we sort of if we widen the lens and look at the bigger picture, part of the challenge is that football needs to grow. The clubs that we support need to get more people coming through the gates, but they're only going to do that if they kind of diversify their approach, and they recognise that there are different people out there with different needs. Now, you and I started working together on the EFL's Family Excellence Scheme, where we're looking at the experience of families who are attending games with kids for the first time. And of course, for them, the shop takes on a much bigger meaning, because it's somewhere where you can spend some time with the kids, and that helps to stop them from becoming bored. So what have you seen that's been different when you've done some of these visits? Can you pick out a couple where you thought, yeah, actually, this is a bit different, this is a bit unique?
Yeah, it's not normally only small things. One example that really springs to mind was Brentford. I remember visiting Brentford, and there were activities actually aimed at the younger fans. Brentford, they were handing out a card in the shop, and they actually had some players in the shop. This is probably about 2 hours before kickoff, an hour and a half before kickoff, and yeah, players were signing autographs for the younger fans.
I think that's a massive point. I mean, if I think of all the assessments I've done, it's probably a similar number to Andy, and I can't remember or hardly remember any occasions when I've seen players in the club shop.
No. I mean, it's such an easy thing to do as well, isn't it? Because you've got squad players who are, employed by the club, who, if they buy into the club's community ethos, and if they buy into the club at all, it's a great opportunity to start, creating a reputation for yourself. I mean, one of our future guests on the podcast, Robbie Paul from the World of Rugby League, now Robbie Hunter-Paul, the first thing that the Bradford Bulls asked him to do when he travelled over from New Zealand to Bradford back in the early 90s, was to actually spend 2 afternoons a week sitting in Burger King in Bradford City Centre. And the reason he did that was not to eat the burgers, because obviously he wouldn't have the finely toned body that he has if he did that, but it was just so that he became known to the people of Bradford, so that they could see, here he is, you can get a picture, you can have an autograph, you can talk to him. And that has a huge impact. So I think we're all agreed at that. That's something that...
I know that Notts County, my local club, one of the things they did this season was to have a group of players just literally be the staff in the shop on a particular day. So they were doing everything from serving to printing numbers on the shirts on a really busy day as well. And I saw some of the pictures and videos from that day, and it made a huge difference.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. And another thing, a similar thing, is for the younger kids, is just having the club mascot in the shop. I think it was Scunthorpe where they had the mascot welcoming you into the shop. They had one of those boards where you can have your photo taken, with a hashtag sign above it. And again, it's only something very, very small, but it's just
so easy again, isn't it?
It's an easy
one to do. And I think what probably, we talk a lot in these podcasts and in all the work we do about making everything join together. So mm-hmm. don't look at anything in isolation. And if you think that, if you get people to come to the shop because the mascot's there or the player's there, they're not just going to go there for 2 or 3 minutes just to see that player. They're going to have a wander around. They're possibly going to buy things. So it all adds into this extra, extra part of the experience that's profitable for the club as well.
Yeah.
It's true what you're saying about, this connectedness thing, this idea that everything should be tied together. You often, I think, and especially in the early days of schemes such as the Family Excellence one with the EFL, you'd find that the way that the club was thinking about the club shop, that it wasn't part of the matchday experience. The matchday experience was effectively, paying your money at the turnstile and getting inside the stadium. And it's almost as if it's been sticking out like a sore thumb as a real opportunity. And again, for me, it's not about the number of staff that you have there. I think about, the engagement levels of the staff. You can have one person in a very busy shop who has a really engaging attitude, who brings kids into the conversation, who makes reference to recent results, and you feel really comfortable there. And, I guess the science would say that over time you probably buy more things, But you often don't find that. You often find staff under pressure. You often find people focusing purely on the transactions and missing those little opportunities.
Well, do you remember that example, Mark, in, I think it was in Almelo in the Netherlands?
Heracles, yeah.
When we went to the Heracles game, and that girl, I mean, I'll let you tell the story, but that girl effectively started the whole experience for us on an amazingly good foot, and it fed through the whole rest of the day.
It did. It kind of defined then and now our perception of Heracles as a football club. I mean, they were always going to have a difficult start playing in black and white stripes for me, but we turned up at the club shop and we wanted to get a small souvenir, as you know, many of our assessors do, just to get the opportunity to get in there. And I asked about pin badges, and the girl that was serving said that, you know, she'd sold out. She didn't think there were any left. And so we said, no, not a problem. We'll have a walk around. I'm sure we'll find another souvenir. And then a couple of minutes later, she hailed us from the counter and said, come back. And she'd actually been in the back office turning up piles of paper and opening drawers and boxes. And she'd finally found one of these pin badges. And it was just one of those lovely little moments. You know, she thought, here's somebody new. I'm going to do my best for them. They're not going to leave here without a really positive memory of this place. And it's, you know, it goes back to this point we make all the time that, you know, we can't play it being Disney football because our DNA is all about winning. But we can find opportunities to learn from places like Disney. And that's all about making the human connection. Darren and I still remember that. We'll remember that for a hell of a long time.
Well, it just shows how important the people are. And it goes back to my comment at the start, I think, that when I said it was hit or miss, because I can think of lots of examples when I've been in a shop, spent a good few minutes in there, looking around, tried to make eye contact with several members of staff, and in the end just almost given up. Because no one even approached me.
Yeah, I think the staff element is really, really important. That comes back to the point about culture of the club and staff training, whether all the staff have bought into the whole experience. Yeah. We had a very similar experience to the example you just gave there when we went to Bury. I think it was a pen that we were after, and a very, very, very similar thing. The guy explained that they didn't actually have pens left, and we left it at that, and we had a browse around the shop. Then the guy, as we were leaving the shop, which was about 10 minutes later, actually came after us with a pen that he'd found somewhere. We have no idea where he found it from. But you know, whenever I think of Bury now, I think of that one single incident. Good thing, and just something like that will probably make me go back to Bury again.
Yeah, it's so true that point you make about, you know, it is a week because of what we do. You know, we, Darren and I, and yourself, you know, and our producer, will probably have a little incident or a little cameo like that that we can associate with any of the clubs we've been to. You know, so you just shout the club name out, and I'm sure, you know, one of us will have had some kind of experience there that we'll always. It will always be the way we characterise that.
Every club, you know, if you look across the spectrum, there's so many different sizes of clubs with, you know, some have superstores or mega stores that are huge with massive ranges. And some clubs have a small kiosk, outside the stadium that people can't even walk into. So things like a great staff encounter that really, really creates a fantastic impression actually levels everything out. You know, you don't have to have a huge amount of space and a massive range of goods to get this right. You can do it with the smallest of resources and people.
What about the promotional aspect? I mean, one of the things we found was that when you're planning for to attend a match, and this could be at any level of football, there'll often be an online store. You know, there are various ways that non-league clubs can be helped by approaches that, you know, kind of economies of scale approaches, where they can all subscribe to a particular store that will keep their kit, you know, perhaps a mug and stuff like that. But you rarely see the actual physical club shop promoted very strongly on websites and promoted very strongly on social media during a match day. And you'd think that where you've got a part of the club whose function is to, you know, engage fans and to actually drive revenue, that more will be done. I mean, do people, you know, have many examples? Are you conscious of this happening? I'm not. I don't see it very often.
No, me neither. I think
No, me neither. And it kind of frustrates us a little bit because especially with non-league, you actually do the visit and, you know, they have actually quite a good product across all touch points, and they haven't used social media or website to sell that. And I think the club shop is one of them. Even at some of the smallest grounds, they'll have a small club shop. You know, you might only sell a few shirts and pin badges. But when you actually go on the visit, that at times can be the highlight of the visit because of the staff that you meet in there. You know, you've got guys who've been volunteers at clubs for 30, 40 years. And, you know, to have a chat with them is a great thing.
We were talking about memories. You talked about that incident at Bury. We were talking about Heracles. And there's one more. And that's North Greenford United.
Yes.
I would never, ever have thought that I would spend my life, you know, remembering North Greenford United.
No.
When Luis and I went to a game there, you're probably talking about 2011, 2012, we found it hard to find. I mean, a subsequent assessor had to actually climb in through a bush in a local housing estate to be able to access the ground. So, you know, they had their challenges, but I was sitting chatting to one of the volunteers at the game against Leighton, as I recall, and their proudest moment had been that they were part of the AFC Wimbledon journey because, you know, Wimbledon had played in their league on their way back to the Football League, and they'd done what many people do, and that was to create a double badged pin badge to celebrate the occasion. And I said, you know, do you have any? And he said, no, but if you give me your address, I'll see if we can find one. And about a week later, there it was in the post, you know, with a little note from the chairman saying, you know, thanks for coming to see us. Here's a little gift. And I've always remembered North Greenford United ever since, you know, still look out for the results.
Do you think it's personal touches like that are more prevalent in non-league, or have you ever experienced that higher up?
What do you think, Darren? You've done a lot.
Yeah, I think it is more common. The smaller the club and the smaller the shop, they do make a lot more effort. I think what the one thing I would say about the bigger stores is that they tend to feel a little bit like you're going into a shop in a shopping centre. You know, there's, you know, staff and perhaps a uniform, and it's all a little bit sort of, you know, impersonal, I guess. So I think it is, you know, and it doesn't have to be. I just think that's the way it is. A lot of these bigger stores are run as, you know, as a proper merchandise store, as if it was, as I say, in a shopping centre or in a town centre.
Yeah. So, producer just reminded me, guys, that one area we haven't discussed is exactly that, Darren, the functional element of it. I mean, functional is not a word that gets you excited, but there are functional. Elements of the management of the store, things like you know, opening times, but more specifically queue management. That's got to be the biggest challenge on a match day, you know, anywhere.
Yeah, one of the things that I find incredible, and I think our producer might agree with me on this, is we stood in a queue once at a game where the queue was so long and so wide that it basically blocked off all the aisles. So anybody else who wanted to buy anything, and I think most of the aisles were like items for kids, basically could not get to them. So the only way you could browse any of those items was if you literally got it to the back of the queue and waited till you got to that point in it to have a look at anything.
It's good that you're now seeing, I mean, I guess this has been happening for a long time, but you know, the idea was that you'd be in the queue at the supermarket, you get to the till, and that's where the cookies and the sweeties are, you know, because you're there. And we're now seeing more clubs recognise that and, you know, place items within easy reach of the queue. So while you're waiting there, because sometimes it can be a long wait, you've actually got things appropriate, you know, to the... to what you're looking for. And I'm thinking about little things like, you know, pin badges, pens, little things that you can pick up. Here's a question for you. There's an existential thing at the heart of football. I was just reading Nick Hornby's famous quote about, I think it comes from Fever Pitch, that was it, where he's describing being a football fan as being in a permanent state of disappointment. Do you think clubs could do more to recognise the emotional connection that fans have to clubs? I remember Nottingham Forest having a really good range of heritage books. And obviously they have some pretty good heritage to talk about, you know, late 70s, early 80s. But And I'd spend quite a while looking at things like that. Do you see evidence of that? I guess we see it at non-league, but do we see evidence of that imaginative ways to engage people with the character and the identity of the club?
I mean, I remember doing one club in London, and it was, they had a huge club shop behind one of the goals, and it was just rammed full of fans and books and memorabilia from years gone by. It was almost like someone's personal collection.
Yeah.
But that tapped into the sense of a club, you know, being at the heart of a community and history that's associated with that. And that was quite interesting to see something like that.
Do we think it's almost like, you know, you don't buy the programme, you buy the fanzine. Something like at Sunderland, you've got the Love Supreme shop just a few hundred yards from the club where you can get T-shirts. I confess to having dropped in there and bought one or two over the years. You know, Martin Smith, son of Pele, and Ole, 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 Phil Gray among them.
I think that taps into what Andy said at the start, that the actual club shops, one of their failings, if you like, if that's the right word, is that a lot of the stuff is very similar to it, from one shop to the next, and doesn't really reflect anything about the club itself. And football fans being what we are, we tend to find things that are a little bit more humorous and a little bit more unique far more appealing, which is why those T-shirts are far better than anything you'll find, I guess, in the main store.
And programs as well. You very rarely find, at least to purchase, old programs in an official club store. But I've been to Yeovil Town over the years, several occasions, and they're one of the clubs that have a separate program stall. I remember Crewe Alexander having one as well. And a lot of people would gather there, they would spend time there, would look through the previous programs. I think even East Fife, where I was quite recently, had something like that. And is the more the clubs do with their club shops to recognise that kind of, you know, that self-deprecating devotion of the fans? So not just looking at a kind of a fairly generic range of kit relating to the current club sponsor, and actually getting more into, you know, heritage, local history, and things like that.
I think this is there's possibly a fear there. I can think of a few clubs who would probably go along the lines of, let's not be self-deprecating, or let's not do anything that gives people an opportunity to criticise us in any way, and actually missing the point that I think that's part of certainly the British psyche in terms of enjoying that, you know, the good times and the bad times, and seeing them a little bit the same. And I think a lot of clubs would steer clear of that, just because they don't think that it would have the right, it would send the right message.
Yeah, you certainly get a much more funny and imaginative T-shirt from an independent seller than you would do, you know, exactly, from the official store. And, you know, and clubs, the big clubs are able to, you know, get a range of T-shirts out, you know, within minutes of a famous victory, you know, so that's not going to be possible for everybody. But let's look at another angle. What about the future of the club shop? Well, I guess it's a question for both you, Andy and Darren, you know, from your visits, from your assessments. If we were to jump 10 years down the road, you know, into a post-COVID world where people are really going to have to focus on getting fans through the gates to, you know, address the losses of the last few months and to build for the future, what are the sort of elements would you see? What will a future club store experience be like?
I think one of the, you know, again, space is going to be an issue in terms of how clubs could execute this effectively. But I think in the future, I think shops within the stadiums need to be a destination that people can go to for far more than just browsing around a shop. So I think there'll be a move towards joining perhaps the club shop up with cafes or coffee or places where people can drink coffee to make it more of a place where people can spend more time.
Yeah, I like the you and I have both visited, in fact all three of us, including the producer, have visited FC Copenhagen's Telia Parken Stadium in recent years, and their club shop right on the corner of the stadium is part club shop, part museum. Yeah. You know, so you've got that option. As soon as you come into the club shop, if you've got some time, you've got that space.
The one at AZ as well particularly springs to mind, that, you know, you're walking around the shop and the next minute you're walking around something that's just, you know, full of nostalgia, and actually the two together hand in hand made it much more compelling than if it was just simply a few, you know, items for sale.
Yeah.
some of the more interesting sort of merchandise experiences we've encountered is when you've had mobile kiosks, especially maybe in a fan zone. So, you know, you've got a bar with a beer tent and you've got some music playing. And if there's, you know, a merchandise store in the corner of room, I personally find that a lot more interesting than just going to a mega store that looks exactly the same as any other mega store at any other ground. It's just that the colours of the shirts are different. So from a personal point of view, I think we've really enjoyed those sorts of arrangements.
And from a commercial point of view, that actually makes sense as well, because if you're in the middle of a sort of area where there's lots of fans and there's a little bit of drink, shall we say, and food, people are enjoying themselves, actually you're probably more likely to buy a shirt than you would be if you were just walking around a store that looked like any other.
Well, the producer's just pointed out that he was at Ashton Gate recently, and right next to their shop, they have a really fantastic sports bar, sports cafe.
Yeah, I think the joining of those two functions in 10 years' time, especially, I think will become a lot more prominent at lots of clubs, certainly the ones who've got the space, because they'll see the benefit of having fans in that right kind of environment and then having the option to buy things as well at the same time. At the moment, it feels they're very separate, and almost it becomes then that the shop becomes very transactional. You know, and that probably doesn't create the kind of vibe that's going to make people spend lots of money there.
Thinking again of the future, you know, are we describing a kind of an outlet that, it's more than one outlet, like we've described, sort of satellite outlets in different parts inside and outside of the stadium, but perhaps that serves for immediate impulse purchases that perhaps leaves other purchases to mail order, you know, that can be at your door the next day, or they can even be at your seat at half time, and actually opening up more space for socialising, interaction, history of the club. And, that does present some challenges to some of the clubs that have less space. But, you know, as Colchester United showed when they opened the kind of independent coffee store at the side of their stadium, there are often rooms and stadiums that can easily be converted.
Well, I was just going to say that, Mark. I was just thinking of what Lincoln City did. And I know that some of the feedback they'd had from about their shop was that it was very small, very difficult to get around in and to browse and therefore also just to put many different items in because of those space limitations. And they took that feedback on board and basically reconfigured that part of the stadium so that a much bigger area was then converted into a shop instead. And now that store's one of the better ones in the EFL.
And when you talk about small stores, one of the best experiences I've had in recent times, and it won't be the first time this club is mentioned, as they'll be featured actually on this podcast series later on, but Montrose, where they have a tiny space. You go through the turnstiles and right there in front of you, there's a tiny, tiny space, probably only room for 3 or 4 people. But what they've done is they've got very clear signage, a very clear price list, one example of every item they can purchase, and then a really helpful assistant behind a desk where the space is used very well. And I guess that's probably akin to some of the better non-league experiences that Andy will have had, but just very effective, you know, and something that's perfect for the size of the club. So are there any other clubs, Andy, where you've had really memorable experience? I mean, I'm thinking of Ipswich, where I think on the second floor of the store, very few clubs have a two-storey shop, but I think I still believe it's the case that you can actually glimpse the glory of Portman Road's pitch when you look out the window up there. Are there any that you remember that remain with you?
Ipswich was excellent, but we've talked about positives. There was one negative. I won't name the club. It was a club in London, and that club shop experience was really, really poor. Layout was atrocious. You mentioned queuing. There was an awful long time to queue to get into the shop. There was no queue management. We had a young family with us, and the kids' items were stored behind a bank of tills, so you couldn't see what items were on sale. And I think the worst thing for us is when we actually asked if we could browse some of those, staff were actually very rude to us. You know, so it goes back to my earlier point about how interaction with staff is so, so important. So it's not just positives, the negatives as well. I won't name the club, but that really lives long in my memory, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's the challenge for clubs, isn't it? And obviously elsewhere in this podcast series and in our work, kind of the most common point we're making, you know, is that clubs need to recognise that there is a kind of an embedded mistrust of fans. It's been there, you know, for years. It probably precedes all of the trouble in the 80s. It's hard to pinpoint how and where it started, but there's just a kind of an atmosphere of keeping fans at an arm's length. You know that they're going to dislike us whatever we do. But Andy, listen, thank you for that. It's great to have those inputs. And I guess you, having lived in the South and moved up to Sheffield, you probably have had the widest perspective of any of the assessors. So let's tell us one thing before we bring today's podcast to a close. Tell us something about the experience of an assessor. What is it that you enjoy most, and what's the most challenging part of it?
I think in terms of enjoyment, I just really enjoy the fact that I feel as if, or we as a family feel as if we're giving something back to the game. I've grown up with football from a very young age, so I consider myself to be a football fan first and foremost. And you know, you go along as a supporter, and before I did any visits for you, you just went along to the game. You wanted your team to win, but you still enjoyed the match day experience, meeting friends, the atmosphere. So it wasn't all about winning. But not until I started doing these visits for you did I get a completely different take on attending football matches.
Well, we appreciate everything you do, and I'm sure you know when we're talking to the team of assessors, but you know, football does appreciate that feedback. When Anna and myself started this in 15 years ago, I thought I was just having a day out for which I was being paid, you know, and it still is the best job in the world. But actually, it's great to know that there is a huge competition among clubs to improve, whether it's the away fan experience, whether it's for existing fans, whether it's for new fans, families, kids, whatever. It's become part of the fabric of certainly of British football, and you know, with the Superliga, the Eredivisie, and the Premium League up in Estonia, lots of other leagues that are following this path. So again, thanks for being with us today, Andy.
There's nothing better for me as well on that one, when I put the reports together, of seeing a club that has taken one of the reports that the assessors like Andy have done, given them lots of feedback, and the club is actually on the next time we go there, has put all of that sort of feedback into good use and implemented some of those improvements. And we see that happen an awful lot. And it's because of the quality of that kind of feedback that the club gets, they're able to do that.
Time for the roundup.
So it's the roundup. And on this episode's roundup, we've got some exciting news from Aarhus. And Aarhus is the Whites that Darren and I visited on at least a couple of occasions. Brilliant during the summer months when they've got a great fan zone and lots going on. I think they've probably got the most food outlets per head of any stadium that either of us have visited. Mm-hmm. They're also fantastic in the winter months. I think it was a very chilly 2 degrees when we went in November, and they had braziers all over the place, so you know, fans could keep their hands warm. But they've actually done something today which is remarkable. They are the first game after more than 2 months without football in Denmark. The fans will still be able to take part in the game and enjoy the togetherness and the community with the fellow fans, because what's happening is they're going to reopen Danish football with a world premiere of a new digital football experience. They're going to run it in collaboration with their Zoom that we all now know and love. And it will be a kind of a virtual stadium to which you pick up a free ticket. As the match begins, you gather with those who have a ticket to the same virtual grandstand section in the stadium that you are. You'll be able to choose from 22 different sections, just like a regular football stadium. This initiative will see several screens set up in the middle of the home stand of Ceres Park, where AGF play. And the fans watching from their virtual grandstand section will be shown. So the players will also be able to see and feel the support from the living rooms around that part of Jutland at a healthy distance, you know, but still close enough to football. So I think, you know, big hand this week to Aarhus. We love AGF. We've been to AGF a few times. Fantastic team there in a fantastic league that's just showing that extra bit of innovation at a time when we really need it.
It also makes you wonder, Mark, what we won't use Zoom for in the future, the way we're going.
I know, that's a good question. You might be absolutely right. But that's it for this week. So my thanks to Darren, my thanks to Andy and you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience was recorded live. See you next time.